Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. And as we do every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, good morning. How are we doing?
Oh, mucho gusto. How are you guys?
We are mucho gusto as well. Thanks for being with us this morning. So, Corey, what did you make of the introductory press conference from Rand Carthon on Friday? What were a couple of takeaways you had from his conference and also with Vrabel up there as well?
Well, you know, I thought the head coach was almost jovial. Didn't you guys feel that way?
He was pretty energetic on Friday.
Especially when he got to talk to Jared.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, he was very excited to talk to Jared. But, you know, so I thought the energy was positive, and it should be, you know, because you're making a move that you think takes you to the next level. So, you know, that was important. You know, obviously everybody got the collaboration message. And, you know, one of my thing is I wondered, would that structure, you know, cost them candidates? You know, would a GM be scared off by, you know, the head coach being elevated to this parallel level? And it sounds like that, you know, partnership is exactly the kind of thing that Rand Carthon was looking for. At least that's the picture that he painted for everyone. So it sounds like everybody's happy and prepared to work together. And you know, talking to Teron and some other people as well, it does sound like, you know, Rand is going to be any kind of puppet. I mean, it sounds like he's going to be able to stand his ground, and they need that. You know, not to say that they can't work together, but, you know, you can't, you know, have one side, I guess, pushing around the other. So I thought a lot of those things, you know, were positive as far as the, I guess, the power structure and the workflow go, but, you know, it all remains to be seen.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the interesting thing about that, the whole, you know, collaboration, you know, maybe difference of opinion. I mean, we've talked a lot on the show today, and I think we'll probably spend another show or two before it's all over talking about the quarterback situation.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing about that, well, first of all, let's see if you agree. I mean, Robbie, and I agree with what Robbie said here, which is if they absolutely believe, first of all, I think, I would hope we'd all agree, like, you have to go through this evaluation, the combine and everything, thinking about quarterback. You have to evaluate them like you have the top pick. You have to evaluate them and know what you have there. But if you do believe you have one that you believe is the guy, then you have to do it this year. But that's Robbie's point. That's what I agree with him. But the interesting thing about that is, of course, if you're Vrabel, you may think of that situation differently than Rand Carthon, right? I mean, you're Vrabel, you've lost 7 straight football games.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're definitely going to have a recency bias, and, you know, you've worked with these guys, so you're going to have a different kind of bias, you know, from having a relationship with them, seeing them at their best and seeing them at their worst. And look, I think at the quarterback situation, unless you've got Burrow or Allen or Mahomes or one of those guys, you've got to evaluate your quarterback position every year, okay? Because we've seen over and over again, unless you have one of those guys, it's really tough to get to the big one, okay? And so if you have a chance to get somebody who might be one of those guys, you have to look really, 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 really hard at it. You know, because the Bengals had a good team for a decade and went one and out in the playoffs over and over again with Andy Dalton, because that's what Andy Dalton was. I think Marv was a really good head coach there. And, you know, he took him as far as his mediocre quarterback could take him. And, you know, that was the question this last season about Ryan Tannehill. You know, could he take the Titans, you know, anywhere in the playoffs if he was the one who had to do it? Because, you know, that's what we've been waiting to see, because the playoff games he did win, he didn't even throw for 100 yards. You know, he made meaningful throws in those games, yes, but he didn't drive the ship. I mean, Derrick Henry drove the ship in those big wins and the defense. He was a supporting cast member. And, you know, these teams that are playing for it, they don't have supporting cast members at quarterback. You know, I guess you could argue about Brock Purdy. And that's a different situation, but the kid's also playing at a pretty high level right now too. So I think you have to. I think it's interesting because you know, he didn't talk that way, talking about Carthon, he didn't talk that way about everybody. And if you remember, you know, Amy in her brief statement said they've got some really big decisions to make. And, you know, whoever's taking the snaps is, you know, arguably among the very, very biggest. So I believe they are considering their options there. I believe they have to consider their options there. The question is do they take a long-term view or a short-term view?
Corey Curtis from News 2 with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Corey, what did you make of Carthon's comments on Derrick Henry? Did you take that as leaning one way or the other that Henry's coming back? And I guess to that same mold, what did you make of, I guess, what he didn't say on Ryan Tannehill?
Well, he's not going to be able to see how big Derrick is unless he brings him back in the building, right?
That is true.
I mean, so it sounds like he's pretty motivated to have Derrick Henry there. And I don't think Derrick Henry did anything this year to not want him back next year. You know, I don't know that we saw quite the same explosive burst that we've seen in the past, but still rushed for 1,500 yards on a team with a bunch of guys from a soup kitchen on the offensive line. So, you know, still performing at a high level. So I understand bringing him back, and I would be very surprised if Derek wasn't back this year. The question is, do they extend him by a year or what? And with Tannehill, yeah. I mean, it's kind of what I said. I mean, you know, you gave this ringing endorsement of Derrick Henry, and with Ryan Tannehill, it's like, whoa, he's been good, but we gotta analyze this situation. But again, as I've said, unless you've got one of those elite guys, you got to evaluate that position and your opportunities every year. But if I was Ryan Tannehill, I don't know if I'd like that answer. I mean, I'll just say that.
Yeah, I would agree. I would hope he'd be realistic about it, though, too, right? I mean,
he's been around the block. Yeah. He knows how it is.
Yeah, he's been – yeah, exactly. So the conference championship games, Corey, you've got Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes in one.
Yeah.
You got Jalen Hurts, Brock Purdy in the other one. Of course, for the Titans, you know, they're on the side with those elite quarterbacks, but – I guess when you look at the NFC, does that at least sort of make the argument that, look, there is not just one way to do this?
I would say yes, but your roster has to be fantastic, because I think when you look at the 49ers and the Eagles, you say two of probably the best three or four rosters in the entire National Football League, right? Top to bottom.
Yep. I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and so, you know, like with Jalen Hurts, you know, I've had this conversation numerous times. I've probably done it here. Should he be in the MVP conversation? Absolutely. He had a fantastic year, but you see the difference this year to last year with Hurts with an outstanding roster around him and Hurts with not an outstanding roster around him. I mean, he went to a whole new level. With that group around him. And, you know, Purdy, you know, has looked really good, you know, without question. And for any rookie on any roster to step in and do that is impressive. But, again, you've got one of the best offensive lines in the game. You've got a strong running game. You know, you've got Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and George. I mean, you got all the pieces. You just have to be able to pull the trigger. And not everybody's able to pull the trigger. And so, you know, that you still – you still got to have that. So, you know, I guess that's the thing, is if you got one of those guys, Burrow, Mahomes, they can cover up a lot of warts on your roster. But if you don't have one of those guys, you've really got to have it together and build it. And you saw those two teams were both really aggressive in going for it this year with the A.J. Brown trade and with the Christian McCaffrey trade. You know, both those teams were all in this year. I guess there is a different way, but those are also two really capable young guys, and the rosters are outstanding. So I guess that's the other part. Now, I don't know if I believe Malik Willis could lead those rosters to the title game, but, you know, the guys they've got are pretty good.
But what about Tannehill?
I think Tannehill, I think Tannehill could get them to those rosters, the AFC NFC championship game. Yeah, I do. I mean, he's done it before. You know, he was, you know, like I said, he was a complimentary piece. He wasn't the driving engine. And with, like, both of those teams, you know, the quarterbacks obviously are very central, but the whole teams are so good that they drive. I mean, defensively, they make plays. Christian McCaffrey, I know he got hurt yesterday, you know, but he's made plays this year. Deebo Samuel makes plays. George Kittle makes plays, you know. So they got dudes all over.
Corey, last thing for you here. Yet another win on the road for Joe Burrow and the Bengals in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
What did you make of his and their performance, and where does Buffalo go from here after yet another disappointing loss in the divisional round?
If I could start my team with any quarterback right now, it would be Joe Burrow, and I don't hesitate at all saying that. He's got the it factor. He is the it factor. He's tough. He's selfless. He's a leader. He makes plays. He expects to win games. And I think, you know, that whole personality and performance elevates the whole team, okay? Offense and defense, I think, are all better because of Joe Burrow. Now, again, he's got weapons too. There's no question. But that offensive line, has not been one we could call one of the best in the NFL the last few years. Now, they ran the football, and that's a whole other thing that Rand Carthon talked about. Bengals ran the football. The Eagles ran the football. You know, these teams really, you know, got it going. And the Bills, you know, they keep putting everything in Josh Allen's hands, including the running game. And, you know, where do they go? I think they've got to find a way to be more balanced. You know, I still think Josh Allen is really good, but they've got to find a way to be more balanced because, you know, if Allen's having a little bit off of a day, they don't seem to stand much of a chance. And I can't tell you the last time I looked at the Bills running game and said, yeah, they've really got it together today over there. And they've had injuries on defense. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they're on like their 19th safety. So that certainly didn't help. But I think the Bills have to search for some offensive balance. And what's the biggest stat in football? You can't turn it over.
Yep.
And the Bills plagued by turnovers this year. And you really wonder, you know, how much of that was Brian Daboll, because who didn't turn the ball over this year? Daniel Jones. So maybe coaching does matter a little bit. So I think they've got to evaluate maybe their OC quarterback coach situation on what they're doing with Josh Allen and find a way to control the ball and not give it away a little bit more. But I do my goofy power rankings on Facebook every week during the season, and I think I finished the year the last two or three weeks with the Bengals as my number one team, to the chagrin of a lot of people. But that's Joe Burrow driven 100%.
Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Corey, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us this morning.
It was great stuff, wasn't it?
It really was. Yes.
Sometimes I even impress myself.
You should.
I brought it. I gave 110%. And
you should go listen to it right now, right back over again.
It's appointment listening, as you point out.
Yes.
Well, it's not just appointment listening now. It's repeat listening.
That's right.
That's right.
No question about it. Corey, thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Later, guys.
Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel press conference coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to Corey Curtis for joining us in the last segment. Appointment listening, as he points out every week. Look, the Carthon press conference, number one, you brought this up earlier, but I'm totally with you. I thought he was really impressive. I enjoyed it. You know, it's a press conference, so we've had people talk about this before. It's, in some ways, kind of hard to lose the press conference in these settings, but I thought he did a really good job. You know, I think based on the information that you learned about him and some of the pieces you came out with at The Athletic, what we talked about last week, and just the background of where he comes from and the jobs that he's had to this point, I'm really excited to see what he does here. You know, we heard the word collaboration a lot. They were asked, Carthon was asked about who has final say. Vrabel was asked about who has final say. And basically their response was, doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter.
Who has final say. It's all about collaboration, which is not a huge surprise. I figured we'd hear something like that on Friday. But overall, I just thought impressive stuff from Rand Carthon, and now the clock kind of starts on the part of his job that matters. What did you think of what we saw from Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel on Friday?
Yeah, and I guess I would agree with – I hadn't really thought about it, but Corey said it and some other people have said it. Like, Vrabel seemed, like, happy, you know?
He was.
I guess. It was – when's the last time – I guess he's had press conferences during the week, but, like, for the most part, he's just been having press conferences amid a terrible losing streak. So now that's over. But it probably has something to do with being excited about the hire, too, I would think. Carthon was super impressive. It was – you know, and just everything people said about him, it added up when he was up there. That's a big step. Just again, when you're in this league and you're number two or number three in a personnel department, you are not the spotlight is not on you whatsoever. Really, I mean, the people in the league know you, and that's a lot of those people end up getting jobs for good franchises. But like it's a totally different level, obviously now of everything. I would think compensation. And attention and pressure and all these things. And I just thought the press conference, he knocked it out of the park. Now, what does personality matter in this job? It's just pick good football players, you know. But right. I think also when you've played in the league like he has and you have the different perspectives that he has, including his dad playing in the league, his dad coaching the league, Bill Parcells is a mentor to him, as he mentioned. And that's one thing actually, Les Snead, the Rams GM, told me last week. I didn't write about it. I didn't get it in there, but he's like he talks to Parcells a lot. Parcells is like his Yoda, you know. He didn't say that. That's me saying it, but that's what it sounds like. You know, like anytime he's needed advice on something, like he has Parcells. That's a pretty good resource.
Yeah.
So I do think that playing, the perspectives, all those things should help inform you in the job.
Agreed.
Doesn't mean you're gonna be perfect, because you won't be, but it's a pretty impressive all around, resume and collection of experiences for someone who's 41. And the Titans may have found themselves the next great GM. I will say also, and I'll agree with Jared on this, it's going to be very hard for him, and it was going to be hard for anyone to match what John Robinson did in his overall success of his tenure. That's a high bar.
It is. And, part of, I guess, the question or – I guess in some cases concern that we had on the Rand Carthon front. We talked about this last week. What about the college side of things and the scouting and the drafting and everything that goes into what you're having to do coming up here in just a few months as general manager? I did think that one part of his answer was pretty interesting I was on the pro side, but basically by title only was what Rand Carthon said over the weekend. So it sounds like he's had some pretty good influence on drafting as well, beyond just the pro side of things.
Yeah. I mean, I would have to say, that's why they split him up, right?
Correct.
I mean, I would still think that, for the most part, he's done a lot more if you add it all up. But certainly the last 2 years, when you're director of player personnel, that means you're working both sides. So, and he relayed the story about – well, I guess that would be in his first year in that role of the drafting of Elijah Mitchell, So, but the Snead gave me two examples where he gave him the credit. It's interesting too because one of them is Whitworth, who people thought was washed. Apparently, Carthon is the one who fought for him, and we know what happened. He was like all pro the next year, and he had been with the Bengals for a long time. And then also Robert Woods, who was kind of fine in Buffalo, but he thought that the precision of a route runner, that basically he would fit well with Jared Goff. Well, that worked out great too. It's funny now because, of course, he comes here and Robert Woods is here.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a tough decision for him right off the bat. But that was a really good job of scouting someone who had, you're talking about four really good years with the Rams.
Oh, yeah.
After that. So
after being okay in Buffalo.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, now, again, those are two pro evaluations. The Mitchell one is a college evaluation. But, yeah, that was interesting. I mean, that was the knock on him is just basically – but, again, if you have a young GM, it's going to be one or the other, right? I just think people – there's a lot more attention on the draft and stuff. People – I think the outside world values college evaluation, the draft, more than probably the NFL world, which if you follow the Titans closely, as you know – evaluating pro personnel, awfully important.
Yes, no question about that. Real quickly, how much do you put into what Carthon said about Derrick Henry, and I guess didn't say about Ryan Tannehill on Friday at his press conference?
The somewhat surprising part of that is that he tipped hand at all. I expected like the same answer for both, which is what he gave on Tannehill. Like I didn't think what he said on Tannehill was any sort of like bad reflection on Tannehill.
No.
It was just what you should say, which is, I mean, I don't know.
Got to evaluate.
Yeah. But when you compare it, when you contrast it to the Derrick Henry answer, it is interesting because, of course, if you are going to size him up, then he's going to be in the building.
Or I guess you can run across the sideline. Just want to see how big you are. Thanks. See you later.
Glad I traded you to the Niners. All right. Go Niners. Still love you, Niners. I think Derrick Henry's going to work out real well for you. Thanks for Trey Lance.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Willie Donick. We'll get his thoughts on a big Preds win over the weekend and some of the lineup decisions the Predators have gone out with and the reaction from the fan base. We'll get into all that with Willie coming up next. But first, Joe Rexroad has a word from our friends at FanDuel Sportsbook.
I do, because if you've been watching NFL playoffs on the sidelines, there is still time to get in the game with FanDuel, which is America's number one sportsbook. New customers, you can bet this Sunday's conference championship games with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. All you have to do is sign up with promo code JOE102. You can bet a game on the money line, point spread. You can bet a player prop. You can combine them for a same game parlay. If I had that $150 in free bets this weekend, how about a parlay of I like the Bengals because I'm really worried about Mahomes. I like Mixon anytime touchdown, and I like the under. So that would be what I would do. You do whatever you want. And, of course, it's an app that's safe, secure, easy to use. Don't miss out. Place that $5 bet. Get $150 in free bets, win or lose, with promo code JOE102. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. And you must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online minimum wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is now withdrawable. Free bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line, 800-889-9789.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Big win for the Preds on Saturday night. A dramatic come-from-behind win for the Nashville Predators on Saturday night. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Willie Donick, of course, from Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, also the voice of the Nashville Predators on Bally Sports. And Willie, before we begin, congratulations in order to you being named the 2022 Tennessee Sportscaster of the Year. Congratulations, my friend.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate that.
No problem. Awesome. So, Willie, big win for the Predators on Saturday night. You scored two goals in the first 40 seconds. LA comes back to get the 3-2 lead, and then a big third period from the Predators. What did you make of, I guess, not only the comeback in the game, but the way that they've been playing over the course of the past week or so?
Well, I think if you look at the last two games, I think you see really where they are right now, the two extremes of what they can be as a team. If you go back to Thursday, they were coming off of back-to-back 2-1 wins where they had just outstanding goaltending to sort of mask over some flaws in the third period where they didn't play the full 60, but they got off to a good start and the goalies closed it out. They go into St. Louis for a big game, and they pretty much collapsed about midway through the game. And it was, in my opinion, really the top players that got badly outplayed by the St. Louis Blues top players. And the Blues have got issues as well. They've got some injuries. They have not played particularly well this year, but they worked the Predators. And nobody had a good feeling about it when they came home on Thursday night after the game. So they had some meetings. They called each other out. They had a big team meeting. They talked to each other. They took responsibility. And really from the top down, there was a good response on Saturday night. And so I think you can see the difference when the top players on the Predators play well, which was the case against Los Angeles on Saturday, as opposed to when they don't play well. The old saying is, as we've heard a million times before, if your top players are your top players, then I think you're going to see a pretty good team. I think that was the case on Thursday in the wrong direction and Saturday in the right direction.
Why do you think the top players, because I agree with you, I think it's, I mean, if you have to point to one thing, it has to be number one on the list this year of, you know, things that have contributed to so far a disappointing season, but why do you think that has been an issue this year, Willie?
Well, it depends on which guy you're talking about. I think you know what you're going to get from Roman Josi every night. I think he is what the other buzzword you hear all the time in an 82-game season, who can be the most consistent? I think you're going to get consistent play from Roman Josi. I think the goaltending has been extremely consistent. But I think if you look at a lot of the previews from the season, the question was, could they get a reasonably similar performance from Philip Forsberg, from Mikael Granlund, Ryan Johansson, from Matt Duchene as they got last year? And I think those four guys in particular are critical to the success of the team. If you tell me those four guys collectively are playing well, maybe not quite as well as they played last year. I mean, those guys, a couple of them had career years. You can't expect that to happen every year. But I think if those four guys can drive the bus, and all four of them had excellent games, I thought, on Saturday, then I think it will make a big, big difference. So I think that's where you start. I think Philip Forsberg's had a good year. I still think he can go on one of those runs. And he had a mini one a couple weeks ago, and you saw the results. It's just amazing when he's playing well, when Matt Duchene's playing well, what the results are as opposed to when they're not.
Well, and to that point, I mean, we can talk about guys like Tanner Janot not having the year offensively that they hoped they would have. You know, Trennan, although he's been a little bit better lately offensively, not the offensive year so far that they hoped that they would have. But if in the second half of the season, Willie, those guys can find a little bit more consistency than they've had so far this year, what sort of a team do you think this could be, given everything else that we've seen? And not only that we've seen from the forwards, but with the way that Saros has played, especially of late.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the frustration with a lot of the people that follow the team, and I completely get that, right? Because this team, we know the narrative, right? They went to the finals in 2017. By 2020, in the bubble, that group, it was stale, and they made the coaching change. They started turning the roster over. And then the competitive rebuild, I think, you know, you haven't heard that term this year, right? They added Nino Niederreiter. They added Ryan McDonough. So I think they felt like with those improvements, a little more veteran leadership, they could be a solid playoff team that would have a chance to win some playoff series. Right now, they're fighting for their lives to be a playoff team. So these next couple of games are critical. Then you have a little break, and then you've got that period of time on the other side where you got to fight until the trade deadline to show that you belong in this mix. I mean, they pretty much committed to this group. Even for those that want to have a rebuild or reset, it's hard to do with the contracts around the league and the salary cap situation that they are. So when you have a great goaltender and you've got the team you have, to me, you're sort of locked in. You have to try to maximize what you do have. And so that remains to be seen. But I think if you start at the top, if those guys have good last 35, 36 games, I think they have a very good chance of making the playoffs. And then we'll see from there, right? Then there's a whole other story that has to be written after that. But they got to get there first. I mean, can't take granted. They've made the postseason 8 straight years. And right now they are 3 points out, I think. So they're right in the pack. but they're fighting to stay with the pack, and they're going to have to play better than they played all year long, I think, a slightly higher level, if they're going to get back into the tournament.
Willie Donick with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Willie, it feels like, especially, you know, you can go throughout Predators history, but especially the last few years, there's always somebody that, like, the fan base focuses in on and draws their ire. I mean, forever it was Ben Harper the last couple of years. And Cole Smith scored his first goal of the season the other night. And lots of interesting reaction to his first goal from Predators fans on social media. What have you made of, I guess, the way that Cole Smith is viewed, and what have you made of the reaction since he scored his first goal of the year the other night?
Yeah, you can't ignore, if you follow social media especially, that's a thing. That's been a thing on social media, and there's some layers to it, right? And first of all, for Cole Smith the person, I think it's very unfortunate for him, right? Here's a guy that is a great story, a four-year college player, never drafted, busted his tail just to get a sniff in the NHL, makes the league minimum. He is overachieved to get to this point, does everything that he's supposed to do in his role. And for whatever reason, he's almost done so well that he probably should score more than he has. And it's kind of weird that he hasn't scored until the other night. And then, of course, he breaks through. But he's become the symbol for so many things. The reason that Phil Tomasino isn't playing, the reason that Ellie Tolvanen was waived, it's not Cole Smith's fault, but he bears the brunt of it. That, to me, is unfortunate for him personally, because you know what? A guy like that, the team's aware of that, right? It weighs on him personally. He feels responsible for that, and it really shouldn't be put on him, in my opinion. It doesn't mean that those other things aren't factors, and the fans, I think, should be asking these kind of questions. That's the mark of a good hockey market, right? A good fan base should be asking educated questions like that. Why is this guy not playing? Why that? But it's unfortunately pointed at Cole Smith, when in the reality, I think all of those things are secondary to the top players. Like, when you look at Duchesne, Forsberg, Granlund, Johansson, those guys make up over a third of the team's payroll. How they play is way, way more directly how the team is going to do, as opposed to the role players on the team. So, that being said, I was really happy for Cole Smith, needless to say. And I think the reaction of the team in the moment it happened said a lot. And I think after the game, when he was rewarded with the helmet, you know, they have that thing, the video, they show the interior where they recognize the player of the game, they give him the helmet, they bang him on the head. Every team's got one of these things. The fact that they recognize him, I think, also says a lot about what they think of him as a person and a teammate.
Yeah, I mean, Cole Smith is to Preds Twitter as Jeff Swaim is to Titans Twitter.
Yeah, probably,
right?
So. I mean,
that's kind of, yeah.
Probably so.
Somewhat similar.
He's a real
similar
person, you know, and yeah. So when you see that person and you're with him every day and you understand that it's a human being, it's not a meme on Twitter, right? That's what frustrates me. There's things we love about social media and things that we really don't love very much. And so that's where it's real, right? To those guys, it's real. You know, you have to try to separate that from your real life, but sometimes it's tough, right? You guys see it when somebody rips you on Twitter. I get it plenty of times, right? It'll hit you for a minute. Then you have to try to get yourself out of that mode and get back to your everyday life.
Yeah, mute everyone. That's my advice.
Right.
So, you know, to your point, well, it's not apples to apples or a direct comparison or spot in the lineup or anything. But you mentioned Tomasino. Are you surprised that he is still in Milwaukee? Do you think he will be up with the club at some point?
Oh, I think he will be up with the club sooner than later. I'm curious. You guys ask David Poile. When he's on, and when
every
he's
week
on our show every week, we would ask him plenty of times, right? He's one of their top prospects. He's still very, very young. He made it to the NHL at an extremely young age. And, you know, I would say that he's a very good prospect, but he's not a Connor McDavid kind of guy that jumps into the league at age 18 and starts doing well. Like, I do think the seasoning he's getting at Milwaukee is going to benefit him long term. That said, I am a little surprised it took this long. When they sent him down after Prague, I thought it was the right move, but I didn't think we'd be sitting here in mid to late January and he'd still be down there. But keep this in mind. I'm not sure everybody realizes this. He did have an injury that kept him out of the lineup for a few weeks. And when I would ask people, the injury he was still playing through until here pretty recently. Now, if you take a look, I think he's pretty healthy. He's been productive. And I think he's ready to come back up. I think it's just, if you look at it, guys, they really, knock on wood, haven't had. This is another reason why it's concerning and frustrating that they're not higher up in the standings. They haven't really been decimated with injuries,
yeah,
other than the things that kind of lined up in a short period of time that kind of forced their hand with Tolvanen on the waiver wire. They did not want to waive Elie Tolvanen, but they lost the three defensemen in a real short period, plus Michael McCarron went into the program. That had some salary cap things in there. But other than that, at forward, they've been pretty healthy. So it's not been an obvious, easy pathway for him to get up into the lineup. And like David Poile told you guys last week, I think they want to bring him up and have him play high up in the lineup and have him play every night when that happens. So I do think it will happen soon. And hopefully when he's up, he's a better player, kind of like Cody Glass, right? Cody Glass disappeared off the radar last year, and a lot of people were saying, well, what a bust. He didn't get anything for Ryan Ellis. What's the deal with this guy? And now he's a pretty darn good player. Right now, if you take a look, he's their number one center. And he's another guy that hopefully will continue to get better, and he's one of the good stories on this team.
Willie, really good stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll be listening coming up at 11 o'clock.
All right, guys, huge games this week.
Oh, yeah.
The Jets and the Devils. Boy, those two, what feeling are you going to have going into that 11-day break? These are pivotal games for sure. Thanks for having me.
No question about it. Willie Donick with us here on Robbie and Rex Show. You can check him out on Caroline. Willie and D-May is coming up at 11 o'clock today on 102.5-106.3 The Game. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Take your thoughts on the Preds. We'll get back into divisional weekend in the NFL as well. Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5-106.3 The Game. Preds fans, don't miss Wednesday night's Smashville Live show at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs starting at 6 o'clock. See your Predators star players up close and personal, plus get autographs and pictures. Preds player guests will be Nino Niederreiter and Ryan McDonough, so looking forward to that. Smashville Live brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, and Superbook Sports. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Thanks to Willie Donick for joining us in the last segment. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Nate. Nate, thanks for calling in.
Morning, guys. Is this really a thing? I haven't seen on social media where Cole Smith, and I'm not on Pred's Facebook, which is apparently a whole different animal than Twitter. Cole Smith is really getting blamed for Tolvanen being sent down?
Well, I think...
Or not sent down, sorry, being traded.
Well, I think it's more... My reaction from the fan base, my gauge on it, is more of... Okay, why is Cole Smith playing in the lineup over Elie Tolvanen?
Someone just said on the text line. Right. Right. It's
which to me is fair. But another thing is, I don't understand how Willie and, from what I gathered from that conversation, you two are so confident that Tomasino is going to come up soon. I mean, it seems like it could potentially be another Tolvanen situation where he's just down in the doghouse.
I wouldn't say I'm confident. That's why I asked Willie. I mean, we ask it. It sounds like it, but yeah, until it happens, I don't know what the heck's going to go on there.
Well, look, I think Willie and I are in two different spots on the Tomasino conversation. I said the day he got sent down that it was a mistake and I wouldn't do it. I mean, and right now he's lighting it up down there now that he's healthy in Milwaukee. So they need to bring him up soon. I don't know that they will.
I don't know that he's going to, and this could be a hot take, but I don't know that he's going to play in the NHL with Hines being the head coach of the Preds.
Thanks for the call, Nate. Well, I mean, look, first off, he's going to be up at some point this year. I don't know how he wouldn't be. I mean, he's at almost a point per game down there. Like, at some point, you need him up. Like, you need him in the lineup. And I think they know that. I mean, look, they've said that. They've said multiple times, whether that was John Hines early in the year when they sent him down or it was David Poyle last week on our show. They've said he's going to be up at some point this year. The question is when. Now, I think we're getting pretty darn close. Now, well, if it was me, he'd have been up a long time ago. But I think we're pretty darn close to him needing to be up and be in the lineup.
Yeah. John and Thompson Station brings up a good point. After Thursday, you know, you got the All-Star break, got a big, you know, you could get him in now, get him practicing. Now, remember, it's an All-Star break. That means a break.
Yeah, they're not practicing.
But, yeah, you know, a little bit of a ramp-up time. Get him used to the idea, you know, kind of plan to have him as a post All-Star break addition. Like Poyle said, you could look at him like a trading deadline acquisition kind of thing,
sure,
too, if you brought him in. But yeah, look, as far as I know, Pred's Facebook is like still blaming Fiala for stuff. Like, I don't know. Pred's Facebook is, I think,
it's a different
another
animal.
Planet altogether. But yeah, honestly, when Willie mentioned to us, you know, texted us, you know, we were talking about the Cole Smith phenomenon. And honestly, I didn't see. I mean, I've definitely heard it from people all year.
Yeah, I've seen it.
But yeah, it's too bad if it, like, the guy scores and it's like, you know, the fan, like a bunch of people are like ripping him because he scored. You know, I mean,
it's not his fault he's playing.
Yeah, right. No, and that's the thing. You can be a great story.
Yeah.
And he is. Willie's right. I mean, just like Tanner Janot is a great story, but it's like if the team is struggling, and in particular, you know, the team is struggling offensively, and you're talking about a forward, then well, all these factors add up to people being mad at Cole Smith.
Well, to me, the correlation unfairly is pretty simple. Like, Cole Smith up until Saturday hadn't scored a goal, and Preds fans look at it and they say, okay, well, they just let Elik Tolvanen walk out of the door, and he's over there scoring left and right for Seattle right now, and you lost him for nothing, and Cole Smith's in the lineup. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Sure, yeah. And I agree. Like, I think it's fair to be mad at management, Hines, whatever, when things aren't going well. It is a different role in the lineup, right? But, like, again, go back to last year. I mean, Luke Cunningham was a consistent. He was going to be in there, and he got top six placement a lot.
Yep.
And didn't do anything. I mean, did not produce. Now, he did things that Hines liked, but he didn't produce, and he was gone after the year, too.
He was. Now, look, I mean, their top six right now is basically Duchesne, Glass, Forsberg, Granlund, Johansson, Niederreiter. That's their top six. You know, is anybody going to get put out of that right now at this point? I don't know. But, I mean, look, they've had different guys bounce around the top six all year. You could put Philip Tomasino with Juuso Parsonen right now on the quote-unquote third line, and I'd still feel pretty good about it.
Right, and you have a chance to do some stuff there. But, look, Willie's point to me is absolutely well taken. The four guys he mentioned –
they got to be better.
The amount of money that they make and the expectations on them.
But it's Groundhog
that's where
Day
the
with
focal.
Some of that.
Yes, but I mean that's where the focus should be.
Yeah, no question about it. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Row. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Chase and Michelle coming up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.